This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. And yes, it's a Wednesday at 11, and that means it's time for bump. What is up with me today? I cannot get over my tongue. Isn't that a great way to start a cold June morning? But yes, you are on Bump and Beyond, and I am your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we are talking parenting. And today, I feel like the topic is a little bit more for older children, I feel. But we're going to find out a lot more about it. Today, we're going to talk about dyslexia. And I was actually quite surprised recently by a comment or a reaction by a person I was talking to about dyslexia. And she was very she very blatantly said that if you've got dyslexia, you can't read and you're never going to be successful in life because you can't read. And I was like, huh? I really feel like we've come a lot further than that with these type of situations. And that's not my perception of dyslexia. I actually know quite a few adults who have dyslexia, and they are very successful and are doing quite well in life. So I was very surprised by this comment, especially considering it is a young mother and the day and age we're living in again. I was very surprised. But hence why this show is happening today is that I feel that if that's the type of comments that are coming out, it's worth talking about it and creating a little bit of awareness and understanding dyslexia, which I thought was quite a common thing, because also my son in his class, and they're not a lot in their class, they're like 15 kids in the class. There's two children that I know of that are dyslexic. And again, they're not doing horribly in school. So I'm a little bit torn by this comment that was happening. But as always, of course, I want you to be part of our conversation. Obviously, I've got an expert here as well, and she will be answering some of your questions as well, and some of my questions. I've got some good questions today. But I want you to be part of the conversation. So if you have any questions or comments, maybe you are dyslexic. And especially, I would love if you're like a grandma and you later in your life found out that you were dyslexic, because I feel that's also something, like a lot more these things are luckily being diagnosed a lot earlier, which means you can have a lot earlier intervention and things like that, and makes a huge difference. But if you maybe only later in your life found out that you're dyslexic and you were struggling through it, basically, share with us. I would really love to know that. You can send us a SMS on 34519. SMSs are charged at 1.50, or you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. Any questions and comments are as always welcome. But like I mentioned, I have brought in the expert when it comes to dyslexia. So my guest today is Inclusive Education Specialist Practitioner. That is a word and a half that I'm not going to be able to remember. Liesl O'Shea. Hello, Liesl. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Yolandi. Thanks for having me. I'm so grateful to be able to talk about this topic that I feel passionate about.
Yes, I also, I mean, obviously a lot through you, I realize that it is quite a very specialized field, dyslexia. And it's not just any teacher who can work with children in dyslexia. But let's start with it, because again, like I said, I had this friend, or let me say this, kindness is the right word in English, in Afrikaans, is that told me that you can't read when you're dyslexic. But is it difficult? Is reading, let's start with that, because it's not my knowledge of it, it's not a natural skill, but is it difficult? Is it difficult to learn to read for in general for people? I don't want to say normal people. That sounds horrible.
There's a very difficult skill. We're not born to be able to read. There's no specific gene that you just have and then you can read. So if you think about babies when they're born, we have an innate ability. We have a spoken language system already in our brain and a visual system. And So already when you're born, you in the environment that you're with, your parents that, you know, speak to you and you're making sounds, that is quite natural. And then, you know, your whole language system is built on that. Yeah. And you need a good understanding for language to be able to read as well. So you need that vocab, and that's why they always tell parents to read to their children, but we'll get to that as well. But reading is not just there. You need formal instruction to be able to read. So, yeah. So many people think it has to do with your IQ, your intelligence, but that's not true. So I know parents that kids can read already when they're four, you know, they think, wow, they are super intelligent. You know how parents are normally. But
yes.
It's not an easy skill, yes, but it's nothing to do with how intelligent you are. So no. It's just a different way the brain works. But to be able to read, you need a good foundational skills, and it must be specifically learned, instructed by somebody, a medium, to be able to learn how to read. And then you build new circuits in the brain. So you know you read from the left-hand side of your brain normally, and then those circuits become stronger with phonemic awareness, and then you can read. And when you can read, you can't, then you can read forever. So those lessons.
Oh, it's like learning to ride a bike.
Yeah, unlearn it. So that's the great thing about the brain. But you need a good understanding of language to be able to learn how to
read. I mean, it is super, like, because I do feel that most people can. I mean, we should also not take it for granted, because it is also actually a privilege to be able to read, because I'm now saying in my frame of reference, most people can read. Obviously, that's not the case for everyone in the world that they are able to read. So we should be aware of that privilege that we have. But a lot of people, so I feel there is a kind of presumption that reading is a natural kind of communication, because as you mentioned, we as humans are actually built to communicate and wanting to interact with each other and speak to each other. But it's a whole different level of learning when it comes to reading. That's not the same. It's not communication. That ability to read is not the same as communicating and talking and things like that, which is very interesting. Like I mentioned before, as always, I do want you to be part of the conversation, but I was just being made aware of that we don't have an SMS line anymore. So don't even waste your time sending an SMS, but you can WhatsApp us on 061-895-1019. If you have any questions about dyslexia, if you have, like I said, for me, I know lots of people who are dyslexic. So for me, it's really not an abnormal or strange thing. I know quite a lot of people who have dyslexia. So it's really an interesting topic. So please do send us comments if you have any comments or questions.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. It's brought to you with compliments of Dyscam Baby City.
Yes, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And as always, we are talking parenting. And today, specifically, as I mentioned, if you've just joined me, we are talking about dyslexia and what it is and what it entails and how, for me, it's not abnormal, but apparently it's not the case for everyone. My special guest today is remedial practitioner Liesl O'Shea, talking about this, because you do need to have a specialized educational degree to be able to assist children with dyslexia, or adults as well, I assume. But on that note, Liesl, because you now just mentioned that reading is not actually, it's a learned skill. It's not something that naturally comes to us. But then what is dyslexia?
So dyslexia, if we just take the word dyslexia and take the prefix dys, it means a difficulty. And if we take lexia, it means language. So it's a difficulty in language. And then the broader spectrum of that is it's a specific learning difficulty that is unexpected. So we'll talk about what I mean by unexpected just now, but it's an unexpected difficulty. We're also talking about developmental dyslexia, not acquired dyslexia today. Just to quickly say the difference, developmental dyslexia is you're born with this, you can't be cured, it's a lifelong difficulty. And acquired is when you had trauma to the brain or an accident, and that changed, obviously, to dyslexia as well. Oh, wow. But we're talking about developmental dyslexia today. So developmental dyslexia normally also with has phonemic awareness difficulties. What do I mean by phonemic awareness? Is if we take the small phonemes of sounds, the small segments of sounds, like let's use cat, and we say k-at, and you take the beginning sound as k, the middle sound a, and the ending sound t, and you put it all together, and then you form cat, and then to know the meaning of cat, and you have a visual, both of us would know how a cat looks like, and we have take meaning to that as well. That is the whole phonemic awareness. So they have difficulty with that. That's quite a big indicator as well when a child struggles with this. Also, a child with dyslexia will be have struggles with working memory, which is that little notepad in your head, like I call it, when you have lots of instructions and you have to keep it in there and you have to know what to do and put the meaning to it and know the second instruction, especially orally when and in a classroom when a teacher gives more than one instruction and they struggle and they maybe just know what the first instruction is. So they have a working memory difficulty as well. Then also rapid naming, which is when you have objects and you have to name these objects and they struggle. They've known, especially in preschool, like let's take triangle and a square, and they've done it the whole year and they know it, but it takes them a bit longer to name it. And that's the same with letters as well. When you put the letters in front of them and then they have to create the sound, but they take longer to do this. So there's a long time for the processing speed in the brain to be able to actually know the sound that it's making as well, the letter. So that in total, all those difficulties is somebody that is represented with dyslexia.
I mean, just from now, that little tick list that you are making, I'm assuming that obviously you could suspect, I mean, I assume as a teacher or even as a parent, that there is something going on. That your child might be struggling with certain things, but it is something that needs to be properly assessed to be able to diagnose it. How does this assessment even work?
So this is a big topic, I guess, that I am always presented with. So you can already, if you a preschool teacher, with that also dyslexic child will struggle with rhyming as well. They just maybe rhyming, you're doing rhyming, and they just struggle with it. Like especially our books like Cats in the Hat, which we love to read. They just can't, you know, all those silly words that's in there, it doesn't make sense to them, and they struggle with the rhyming. A preschool teacher can already indicate to a parent that they're forgetting friends' names as well. Or things like that already when they're young, you can already indicate maybe dyslexic type difficulties. And maybe a diagnosis. I haven't had a diagnosis or a child with diagnosis as early as 5 yet myself, but you can get diagnosed if you're already sharp, like I said, preschool teacher, and have those indicators, you can already get assessed. And obviously, if I say assessed, I can also assess. I just can't diagnose. So I am qualified to assess and screen and to intervene, but I can't give a diagnosis. So a psychologist, educational psychologist, or a medical professional that knows about dyslexia as well will have also their own tests that they do, diagnostic assessments, and all those reports. Maybe you've seen a speech therapist and an OT. And all that history and the teacher's report, you can make a educational psychologist will make a diagnosis from there on. And that will normally be from around about 7 years old already. You can make a diagnosis. And obviously,
no, because I was just now wondering at what age then, because for me, again, when we think, I mean, now I understand a little bit more, it's not just to do with the reading part of it, but for me, in my head, it is, reading, you need to be able, dyslexia and reading kind of goes together, and so I just assumed it must be at least at an age where a child is starting to learn to read where you can diagnose it.
So even with we saying that early intervention is key, so if you have those, if you're already a mom sitting there or a teacher that might think, I wonder, that already you can get intervention. Early intervention is key. Even if the child is born with dyslexia and it's only later diagnosed, that reading barriers that you see, phonemic awareness that we're talking about, working memory, if you see any of that, you already can do instruction specifically to that barrier that you're seeing, because that will help them anyways later on build those foundational skills. So early intervention, I always tell that to parents, you have nothing to lose. I mean, if this child is not diagnosed later on with dyslexia, but just had a reading barrier and he's blooming late, maybe there was another difficulty in that process that can be fixed. Like, obviously, you need to go for an eye test. You need to go for hearing, because auditory, all those things are important to hear the sounds. So if something is wrong there and it can be assessed and fixed, obviously, that has nothing to do with dyslexia.
Yeah.
But if the child later on is diagnosed, already had great foundational skills and people that supporting him, building those connections in the brain that we need to be able to read.
Oh, and I mean, reading is also such a, I love reading. I do have to say that I didn't always love reading, but I do love reading, and I'm really trying to foster a love for reading in my children as well. I'm going with a strategy of leading by example, or reading by example, and hoping that that's going to foster. And I mean, my daughter is really key into it. But I mean, my thinking is just as well, like what you said, even if this child isn't dyslexic, if they're struggling to do it, all these interventions that you're talking about early on could help that, because I mean, you're never going to foster love for reading if you are struggling to read.
Not at all. And that is why it's so important. I know you work with younger children as well, but there was an interesting study as well that they did with parents that read with their kids. Now, from 6 months, which they advise every night to read, even if you old picture books or whatever. And then this study that they found, when parents were reading and making a connection and bringing all the emotion as well into a book, and then they did it also the same story that that parent had read with the child. This is not all brain scans, and I will give it to you afterwards. I can't remember the person's name now. But and then also with the media, with digital, the same story the child was listening to, and the activation of the brain was way more intense than with the mom or the dad or reading with them happening in the brain than the same story with visuals on a digital platform. Activation. So that is why that is so important, to build that semantic memory, the vocab, to build connection and emotion also with words. And that's when you do it. That is the base of it. So even if your child, like I say, you're born with dyslexia, right? And it can't be cured, but that will help a lot already. The child, when he is now learning to read, he's already going to have a better base than the child that didn't have it.
Yeah.
It's represented with dyslexia.
It is so very interesting. If you've just joined us, you are on 101.9 High FM. This is Bump and Beyond. And as always, we're talking parenting. And specifically today, we're talking about dyslexia. And my guest today is remedial practitioner Liesl O'Shea. As always, as I mentioned before, if you want to be part of the conversation, you can send us a WhatsApp. I mean, by now, if you haven't downloaded the app yet for High FM, really, you should, because you can directly on the app go click on the little button and then you directly WhatsApp us. It's really convenient and easy while you're listening to this. So it's really great. But our WhatsApp number is 061-895-1019. And if you've got questions or comments, that would be great. Now, the next question I wanted to say, Liesl, is that you have spoken about dyslexia. And I mean, again, I'm going back to that comment where I had, where this person was like completely like, you can't be successful. And we can get to the myths of dyslexia just now, because I think there's a lot of those. But how common is dyslexia? For me, it's not such an unusual thing at all.
No, it is quite I think the problem is it's not diagnosed, and much later, maybe, like you say, you know, adults. And I wonder from those adults when they were diagnosed. I would wonder what the status in South Africa
was. That I don't know.
So in South Africa, it's about 1 out of 10 children, but I think it's actually more. I see a lot of children with reading barriers, maybe not diagnosed yet, but a lot with the reading barriers at the moment from grade four onwards as well. So 1 out of 10, which is quite a big number still. And if you actually look in South Africa as well, the literacy issue that we have from grade four, how many is on a low level of reading? It is quite scary as well. So it is quite common. And you can learn to read when you have dyslexia. So that's the hopeful part. And if you think of, I don't want to focus too much on famous people that have dyslexia, but lots of entrepreneurs, that's wonderful, that we know about that has dyslexia, that has made a great success because their brain work differently. They think out of the box and they have a great strength in their right side of their brain. They can, you know, that's why you can see kids have a great strength in building things. Envisioning, they have a great mind actually, and so yeah. So I would just say it's very common, more common than we think.
Yes.
And early intervention, again, I'm going to say that is key. They can learn to read. They can be successful. I think the sad part is the children that I see that has been maybe diagnosed very late. It's much harder because children think that there's something wrong with them. You can just imagine going to school each day, not knowing how to read. Even in grade one, I see it with my little one. They find achievements in it, and it's great when you can read.
Mm.
So already the self-confidence when you can't read like your peers,
already
starts so small. So you can imagine if that happens every single day because you're going to school most days, and that happens to you in grade five or grade six, your confidence at that point of time.
And there's not really anything wrong with you. And it is something that there are tools available to us to help those children as well, to make it easier on them. I mean, I can just, my heart breaks when I just think about it.
Yeah, it's a tough, and you know, we can talk about the famous people, but in reality, these children are sitting in a situation where they feel, and I'm going to use the word dumb because that's what they use. They feel dumb. They have to go to school. And when you're in grade four, you're not, like we're talking about enjoyment for reading. You have to now learn or you read to learn and then write the exam. And you have to work harder than most your peers every day to be able to do that. And then you fail. You fail because you couldn't read. But you know you have all the knowledge.
Yes.
So there are tools out there and ways to assist these children to succeed.
What are some of these tools that we can help to these children?
So if at all schools, so I don't want to – lots of schools have their own policy and accommodation. So obviously depends on the child's age. And also dyslexia, you don't just have dyslexia and you don't have dyslexia. There's no clear cut point. You have mild dyslexia, you have moderate, and you have severe. And I have all of them that I intervene with as well. So obviously, if you're very severe, you will maybe need a scribe, a reader, those kind of accommodations. But all schools have different policies. So that's quite tricky.
So, but that's not a scribe and a reader. You mean that someone then actually reads to them the exam, and they write for them as well.
Or they just have a separate – lots of dyslexic children also have comorbidities, ADHD. 40% of dyslexic children also have ADHD.
Oh.
So separate rooms will also help. But not all schools – if you think of a class situation where there's 34 children.
And one teacher.
Exactly, 1 out of 10 has dyslexia. You can't build a room for each one. So you get different ways you can help. Extra time, because we said a dyslexic child takes longer to get there. They get there. It's like somebody wanting to finish your sentence all the time. And you know what you're going to say, but you're not giving them time.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the exam. They need extra time. You can't expect them as their peer that is a skilled reader and a dyslexic child to in an hour's time to read a comprehension, comprehend what they're reading, answer the questions, and then expect them to perform. And they have anxiety as well when they write tests. Normal children with
have anxiety when they're
writing. So can you imagine how they must feel like? So I get very frustrated with schools, and this is that with a severe dyslexic that has a diagnosis, they have an OT report, they have a speech report, they have a remedial therapist report, and they still don't get accommodations. Drives me insane. So because people are there and that we can assist them with this.
And I mean, if someone now comes to you, a child with dyslexia, and I mean, let's say, I mean, we can probably talk about this for hours also if we go down mild and, like you said, severe dyslexia. But what generally would you then assist them with?
So my I study through Bella Vista, and we screen, like I said, we will screen for that and then give a report, and then we can also, do the intervention. So the intervention is key to build those circuits in the brains, because like I said, they work from the right-hand side and we actually read from the left. So they take way longer to get there. So what I would do is I build those circuits. So that's my job. So I have to over-learning, but also not, we're not talking about worksheets. Worksheets where they have to write things out, because that's tough for them already. They do this at school. So we use a multi-sensory way. So there's different ways. So just to give a quick example, if we take the alphabet and the letters, because we want them to recognize the letters automatically and give the sound, which they struggle with because of the phonemic awareness, we will do a bag and they will have to feel the letter and then say what letter name it is and then what sound it makes. And we have fun in that way. So different aspects that you can use, but doing the same thing over and over again till that circuit is well developed.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker, is brought to you with compliments of Dischem Baby City.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond. And today I am speaking to remedial practitioner Liesel, a show about dyslexia. And it's been really interesting. I do have to say that I've learned a lot. Luckily, I mean, it would be a waste of time if I had to get an expert in and I knew everything already. It's very, very interesting for me, this topic. As well, again, for me, a very special thing about it is the fact that I always, and I mean, you've mentioned it multiple times now, is that early intervention is so key. And I think this is why I'm so passionate about the show as well, is just for me that thing is that even just to make a parent think a little bit in that direction and to think a little bit if they're thinking about their child might be struggling with something silly. And just to make that connection, think, hey, maybe there is something. And then again, then maybe this is a 5 or 6 year old that can have that intervention from an early age, because it makes things just so much easier. But as well, like I said, I did have a friend who already had a little bit of a strange perception about dyslexia. But what are some of those other myths, Liesel, that you've come across when it comes to dyslexic children or adults?
So firstly, I know this sounds weird, but some people don't believe it exists.
Oh, really?
And in the educational department as well. So it definitely does exist. So that's not a myth. And there's a lot of scientific evidence that you can go look everywhere in the world that it exists, and there's great experts out there that are still doing great research on this topic as well, with new information that you can follow. So definitely it exists, that you read backwards.
And that's also, I wanted to say, I also thought that people like read backwards, or you mix up your letters or something like that.
So the reversals are an indicator, but if you take your, I was now privileged when I was studying this, to go through with my one child and now my other one learning to read, to see how they do it, you know, because I know now more about it. The reversals are quite common anyway. So the first thing when somebody sees a reversal, they would say, oh, do you think they have dyslexia? So that's literally what people do that knows what I do. And they're like, you know, and I'm like, that is quite natural to swap it. When it becomes an indicator is when they keep on continuously doing this and grade two and in grade three, even though they had that formal instruction. When you just learn how to read and to write and to make that connection with the phoneme, the sound, and then also the print as well, it's a natural thing to swap it still around because it's a new object for your brain. And you have to, your brain must make that circuit or the like, I don't know, keep on saying that it has to be built and then they become better in it. So reversal itself is not just the indicator.
I mean, that's really interesting. On that reversal thing, just also a personal note on that, because my son also, I felt for an inappropriate amount of time was doing reversal. And to be honest, now that you're mentioning it, I remember that his teacher, who's also actually one of those adults who is dyslexic, she mentioned it to me.
Yes.
But in the end, he wasn't dyslexic. He was actually had a few issues with his midline crossing and things like that. And he had to get occupational therapy. But again, also something that I very often say is that it's so interesting how all these things also intertwine and work together. And often it's a team effort. It's not just necessarily a remedial practitioner that you will see. You will see an OT, a speech therapist, and all these things at the same time. Love it.
And that's why when you come to somebody like me, I'm normally the last resort, to be honest. So you've been probably to an OT, you've been to a speech therapist, you've been to an educational psychologist probably. Like I said, 40% of dyslexic children also represent with ADHD and maybe other comorbidities like dyscalculia, which is all different topics on their own. So maybe you've seen an educational psychologist too, and I use, which is great, I use all that information. I have to study all that information to see where the weakness lies. And I work then, that's why somebody like me comes in and I work on the child where I see where the fallouts are and where specifically they have a problem with their phonemic awareness, how they spell, how to assist them. Spelling, unfortunately, is one of those things I just must mention that is the last thing that will improve. It's extremely tough for them. But luckily, with technology out there and
spell check.
That is actually not the most massive concern that you can have is the spelling. But obviously, we do work on that. And also, their hearing has been tested. Their eyes have been tested. So, and then I work with them with all that information before you intervene. And another myth as well is with eyes. So there is if you have an overlay of green or yellow, or you get glasses and you had a tracking problem or anything like that, and it just all of a sudden you can read, you didn't have dyslexia. So you can't do eye. There's like eye interventions and eye therapy, but that's a completely another thing. So if you improve immensely and you don't have a problem anymore and all of a sudden you can read like on a high level, it wasn't dyslexia. Dyslexia takes overlearning and you need intervention for it to become better. To become
And manageable.
And manageable, definitely. No. You need instruction.
I know. But before, because we're fast now running out of time, and I do want to talk a little bit about this as well. I mean, in the end of the day, now we know it's relatively common and there's interventions, but what is some of the effects that dyslexia has on children?
So, yes. So lots of the dyslexic children normally are orally, not always, quite strong and witty, and all the ones that I know, especially the children I see, they're wonderful to talk to, but they can get withdrawn. The emotional part is huge. You need support. There's lots of teachers also out there, and that's why I studied it. I was in an environment that should know. I was a grade four teacher in a remedial environment, and I had kids that couldn't read, and I did not understand how to help them. I didn't know how to help them, and that's why I went into specialize in dyslexia. But they get withdrawn. They don't want to talk a lot anymore. They don't want to read out loud, which obviously some teachers let these children still read out loud. Don't let a child read out loud in a class if you know they have a reading barrier. I mean, emotionally has a big knock on them. They maybe have behavior, like I said, it normally is they have ADHD. Maybe they have very destructive behavior. And it's because they're frustrated each day as well, and they get in trouble. So you have that as well. They want to, later on, there's a big amount of children that drop out of school, unfortunately, and it's such a waste because they have such a beautiful brain that...
Because dyslexia, like you said before, doesn't mean you're stupid.
Not at all. They actually have amazing, if you go do research, their brains are actually, if we could see each other, not like we see each other and we only see each other, we could see the brain first when we meet somebody. You will be fascinated by their brains. You need those children in the world. That is, if you just think of Steven Spielberg, he only later when he was an adult found out he was dyslexic. But those people are creative. You need them. You don't want them to drop out of school. They need support. So emotionally, they need a lot of support. They don't want to participate in any reading activity. They hate reading, which you can imagine. They don't find any joy in it. But the big one is they feel stupid. They do. They feel dumb. They feel different. And if you have a teacher, you just need one teacher that says something to you and they focus just on that and they don't believe in themselves anymore. They don't believe that they have any part in the society. They just feel, you know, deprived of all the joy that reading brings as well. So
So early intervention is key.
Yes.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
And just like that, another show has come to a end, and it was a great one today. Talking to Liesel O'Shea about dyslexia, and I've learned so much. And it warms my heart also to know that there are people like that who can help with this situation, because it is, like she said many times in between, it is definitely something. Early intervention is key, and it is something that you can manage and make a success. There's no reason for you to be unsuccessful when you have dyslexia. So Liesel, on that note, thank you so much for joining me today. Where can people reach you? I mean, obviously I know you are in Pretoria, but there are lots of people like you who can assist.
Unfortunately, Pretoria, not so many, but I studied through Bella Vista, and they have a great center that you can contact called Bella Vista Seek, but also you can just visit their site, bellavista.org.za, and contact them. They have all the lists of all the practitioners all over South Africa that can assist with dyslexia and also dyscalculia, and they can give you advice, and they also have a center where you can just go and assess. And they can give you from there on their advice to the schools or wherever you are, or if you want to obviously now also go to Bella Vista. But also people are welcome to ask me questions and contact me via email, liesel.shea@icloud.com, to answer maybe some questions or direct them to the right path.
Thank you so much, Liesel. It was fantastic speaking to you, and I'm sure another show is on the horizon to speak more about this topic. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. If you've missed the show, do not despair, because it will be available as a podcast after just a little bit later today. This show and all of my shows are available on hivefm.com, so you can go listen. And I mean, there's a nice variety of topics that you can go look at now. And if there's a specific topic that you want me to cover, remember that you can either DM me directly on Instagram, Yolandi Becker, or you can send me an email, yolandi@goodnightbaby.co.za, and let me know if there's a specific topic. You can even send it to Kathy@highfm.com. She will forward me the email, so don't worry about it. If there is something specific, if you want me to get in an expert on a specific topic, of course, I want to talk about it. But just like that, again, another show has come to an end. But again, don't worry. Next week, I am talking to a psychologist about becoming a parent and adjusting to parenting. So please do join me next week as I talk to Fiona about that, because parenting is hard and adjusting to it can be very tricky. But one of the greatest gifts you can give your child is the example of kindness. Thank you so much for joining me today. Until next time, enjoy your day.